I'm Kevin Kunzman, Associate Editorial Director of Medical News Site HCP Live. Welcome to Doc Talk. Welcome back to another episode of the flagship podcast series from hcplive.com. If you're interested in more medical podcast content, we'd recommend you check out our other specialty-based shows, including Lungcast, a monthly respiratory series co-produced by the American Lung Association, Diabetes Dialogue featuring Drs. Diana Isaacs and Natalie Bellini, Don't Miss a Beat, our heart failure news and insight series led by Drs. Stephen Green and Muthu Vadaganathan, and New Insight with Dr. Viral Sheth, our retina disease interview series. Today's topic touches on a promising development in autism diagnostics, an eye-tracking-based tool designed to measure social visual engagement in toddler-aged children from Erlotech Diagnostics now has data showing consistent sensitivity and specificity for detecting clinical assessment-supported levels of social disability and nonverbal cognitive ability. In short, this tool may provide specialists the ability to affirm assessment-based autism diagnoses in the earliest stages of presentation. We spoke with lead study author Dr. Warren Jones of the Marcus Autism Center to discuss his team's findings, the state of autism diagnosis and detection, and the potential utility of this eye-tracking device in pediatric neurobehavioral care. We hope you enjoy. Hey, Dr. Jones, once again, thank you so much for taking time to speak with me on this subject of your team's essential clinical stage data regarding a new opportunity for engaging, diagnosing potentially autism in, early age children who have been deemed at risk and, referred to a specialist for review. Obviously, as we were saying just before, this has been an aspirational discussion for quite a while now of emphasizing the timeliness of intervention and its vital role in helping improve the livelihood and general outlook for our youngest autism spectrum disorder risk patients. So first and foremost, before we talk about this data, which we'll be reviewing pretty extensively, I wanted to see if you could help set a background in terms of our current standards and best practices that we have available for diagnosing and identifying autism.
Sure. So currently right now, autism is diagnosed behaviorally. It's diagnosed, and the gold standard instruments are assessments, direct assessments of a child's behavior performed by a highly trained expert clinician. Best practice guidelines also call for assessing a child's verbal and cognitive abilities so that the family can be given a kind of comprehensive assessment of a child's strengths and vulnerabilities along with these assessments for social disability. And those are very good, validated tools. However, there's a big challenge in the community that there are not enough expert clinicians to meet the needs of all the children who have concerns about their early development. And so there are really long wait lists at most all of the major autism treatment centers and specialty diagnostic centers across the country. If you look at the CDC data on prevalence of autism over the last probably two decades of different cohorts of identification, even as autism awareness has increased substantially and our understanding that the prevalence of autism is higher than we used to think, still the age of average autism diagnosis, the median age at diagnosis, has not budged. It's stuck at about age 4 to 5. And that's in direct contrast to the ages at which most parents actually become concerned about their child's development. So the majority of parents have concerns for their child's development prior to the age of 2. What we see in the field right now is that the average diagnostic odyssey from concern to actually getting a diagnosis is 2 years. 2 years in the life of a 2-year-old child, and for those worrying parents, is enormously long and something that we as a field have to grapple with. So that's really the background against which we've been trying to develop new technologies, new things that might speed that process from point of first concern to point of diagnosis and to support of treatment of children and families.
And in discussing, said device in terms of eye tracking measurements to help gauge, presence of autism spectrum disorder and again, younger age patients, can you talk a little bit about, the conceptualization of that as an avenue of diagnostics? When exactly did we pick up on that as our key opportunity?
Absolutely. So you mentioned that we've come a ways from the sort of aspirational goals to actually a point of having clinical tools that we hope can really answer this public health challenge. These two papers that are being simultaneously published in JAMA and JAMA Network Open are really the culmination of more than 20 years of prior research directly by our group and by lots of other groups in the field at large. And they really built on basic clinical insights from expert clinicians of what do we use to diagnose a child with autism? How is a child with autism engaging with social information differently than some other children? What might this child be missing? And how does that affect learning? And one of the things that is sort of present in the diagnostic definition is social disability fundamentally, and oftentimes reduced attention to meaningful social cues. That means that a technology like eye tracking, where we measure the movements of a child's eyes as many as 120 times per second, measure exactly what that child is looking at, can be used to identify a biomarker of emerging social disability. And so with this technology, we present scenes of social interaction, scenes of other children at play, and we measure at that 120 times per second, what is a child looking at each moment in time. And we compare each new child being tested to age-expected patterns of looking from general population cohorts. So these two papers span in total more than 1,500 children tested across three different studies, one discovery study and two replications, all focused on the goal of how can we identify and diagnose children and assess their individual levels of ability between the ages of 16 and 30 months. So we really want it to be prior to the age of 3 years, when we know that some of our early identification and early intervention can have the greatest beneficial impact for children and families. We can help kids at any age, but getting in earlier, like in many areas of medicine, is more beneficial.
It's really fascinating, Dr. Jones, and obviously very exciting. It makes me think of, I guess, that old adage that I've heard from pediatricians before of, I know children, but you know your child, right? And speaking to that level of concern that a patient has much earlier than the average diagnostics, it sounds like it's almost a validation of that concern, right? Because that's such an easy gauge for a parent to start to identify a risk of autism, right? Of like, they're not keeping attention on what I thought they would be. They're not engaging with me in the way that, I see other parents are going through, right? So it almost feels like a clinical innovation that meets in the middle with that parent concern that like should, inform the response.
So very common early concerns about autism are when a child is not responding to the call of his or her own name, but responding to other sounds in the environment. Not engaging with parents or other children in the ways that they would expect. And parents pick up on that. Grandparents also pick up on those things. And what's the challenge currently has been that if you chart parent concern, that starts fairly early. But connecting those concerns with expert clinicians who can provide the comprehensive evaluations often takes multiple referrals. And then we don't right now have enough expert clinicians to go around. So I'm here at the Marcus Autism Center. This is one of the largest standalone centers for diagnosis and treatment of autism in the country. Lots of places don't have a Marcus Autism Center in their backyard. And even here at Marcus, we have a wait list, unfortunately. And so we need more solutions that make it possible for clinicians to accelerate the progress of a parent has a concern. Can we answer that concern, provide actionable diagnostic information, and then get the child on to the most important next step, which is how do we support this individual child? How do we support the family so that every child can do the best that they can do?
And following up immediately on that, if we're playing out the scenario, a short-term scenario where, again, application of a promising device like this, leads to a boom in opportunities to provide more timely care, and we're at an opportunity of rollout, how exactly would that be best streamlined? Do you imagine that this is going to help improve our guidelines, for example, our key recommendations, and provide your peers a clear guidance of like, this is how to get them on the inside track of making a difference in an early autism case?
So this is certainly a tool that we hope, the studies being published essentially validate this tool, which is now a cleared FDA device to aid in the diagnosis and assessment of autism. So just this past June 29th, it was FDA cleared, that this tool really supports clinical decision-making to provide an objective measurement of the emergence of social disability. And I would state as well that the early diagnosis of autism is not trivial. In our studies, we found that expert clinicians often had some uncertainty about the diagnosis. And so we hope that these objective performance-based measures that measure exactly what the child is doing can really help support clinical decision-making. So I want to be very clear that this is not a tool that replaces expert clinicians. It's something that we hope gives them a lot more information to guide their practice and to make it possible to help some kids move as quickly as possible on to support and intervention and next steps.
Right. More so a validation of their insight into, you know, what they're seeing.
Absolutely. And the sort of past research development of this tool came exactly from that. We set about to design technologies that would quantify the best qualitative insights of gifted, highly experienced clinicians who had assessed thousands of children. And we thought about how can we make technology that will measure the same kinds of behaviors that children are presenting that a gifted, experienced clinician identifies immediately through their assessment. How can we quantify that and turn that into actionable measures that can be used in the diagnostic process? In many respects, what we're doing is not unlike, say, a treadmill test in cardiology, where in order to identify some challenges, a patient might run on a treadmill for a little while, elevate the heart rate, and at that moment, you can identify some differences that maybe aren't identifiable in other straits.
Yeah.
We present videos of social interaction for the child. It's as simple as watching TV, but for the clinician, it becomes a wealth of clinically actionable information to guide the diagnostic process.
There's a reason things like the 6-minute walking test is as valuable as like a pheno exam, right? It provides an actual application of this is how they're living their lives, like the, you know, speaking toward the quality of life parameters of, you know, disease.
Absolutely. And we also like to think about how it's kind of a reminder that, you know, we think a lot about disability, but disability is a co-creation. Disability isn't inside the child. Disability is where the child meets some context, and some contexts are really challenging and present as disability, some contexts not at all. So we present a context that is going to see how does a child respond to all of these cues? Is the child paying attention to some of the information that helps support typical language learning, typical cognitive and social skills? And we see how that child is doing. And if a child is missing some of those opportunities, that's an area that we can identify as needing some support.
Excellent. Thank you so much for this, Dr. Jones. And then lastly, speaking, you know, acknowledging your team's conclusive note on as promising as this is, next step is seeing the clinical application, seeing it in practice and in real action and seeing what it's delivering. Assuming obviously we're going to have follow-up and further assessment into this device, into this tool and its application in that sense, what exactly would that look like? Is there something that's in development already by your team? What would it look like ideally to you that you'd be seeking out to learn more about?
There is, and I appreciate that question, especially because in some past years' research, we'd be talking about clinical implications that were still a long ways off. We've had research into these same measures that looked, for instance, at twins, and we were able to see that there's a strong degree of genetic influence on what we're measuring, that it's anchored in human biology. But to this question right now, I can actually finally respond that the clinical implications and the clinical applications are actually here. So unlike future implications, we actually have been moving this, translating it from the research lab into a clinical device. My colleague, Ami Klin, and I actually set up a company, Early Tech Diagnostics, to develop the technology. We are still scientific consultants to and supporting that company, but the company has actually launched the product that was cleared, and it is available for clinical use now. So we're primarily still affiliated with Emory. Our involvement with Early Tech is overseen by Emory University for that. But the tool is actually ready for use and is an actual product that can be incorporated into clinical practice. So we are out in the first clinics right now, and we're working with clinicians to understand how do these measures compare to the assessments that they're used to providing, the gold standard assessments, and how can they use the information coming from this tool to improve their processes and try to reach more kids and families.
That's really all I had in terms of, just interest in this current research. But is there anything else that we didn't get to talk about that you'd want to mention?
We really have hit on most of the key areas. That's all that I can think of for right now. I really appreciate your interest in the work and in the topic.
Absolutely. Thank you. I really appreciate all your insight and just excited to learn more about this as it develops.
All right. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Thanks again to Dr. Jones for speaking with us. To learn more about his team's research, you can read our full report on the study at hcplive.com. There you can also register for our daily newsletter and find plenty more psychiatry and family news and insights. Be sure to follow HCP Live on Twitter, LinkedIn, and Facebook, and look out for our newest podcast show episodes on your favorite platforms. From HCP Live, I'm Kevin Kunzman. Thanks for listening to Doc Talk.